Make It Right, the manufacturing podcast.
Manufacturing has been changing over the last number of years as it pursues new technologies and processes, while at the same time, the consumer has also been changing. Regardless of what you sell, it's likely that your customer is much better informed and knowledgeable about your product and your competitions than ever before, which means that your product needs to give the people what they want, and your sales and marketing needs to know who those customers are and tell them that your product does just that. Welcome to the Make It Right podcast. I'm Janet Eastman, and this week on the show, I continue my conversation with Chris Rebsman, founder and president at Jupiter Sales and Marketing. He has a wealth of experience, having worked in consumer goods for more than 30 years and working with each distribution channel in retail, as well as leading successful consumer product companies and sales teams. He's had proven success growing strategic accounts, the revenue base, and profitability. Last week, on episode 65 of the Make It Right podcast, he shared some valuable knowledge on how to get your product into a store and how to keep it there. This week on Make It Right, he continues to share his approaches to addressing sales challenges in an ever-changing consumer-driven market. And we pick up the conversation talking about sales paths. What's your approach to finding and establishing that sales path? How do you go about that?
You know, that's a really good question. Because the market is changing so rapidly, it's when you find a sales path, it really comes down to targeting who the consumer is, where they're shopping. And it's hard to actually, so your sales path itself is, my interpretation is the strongest sales path, depending if you want to just generate cash, if you want brand awareness, what is really the path? I think from a category perspective, grocery right now is the safest path to market. Being because it just more people are paying more money at the register. You know, they're more nimble as far as brands. They're paying attention to what they're putting inside their bodies. But really identifying with that consumer and that segment. I think the grocery segment is probably the best as far as the category itself or channel. That's the best path. So, but there are steps along the way that you have to, you know, you have to do the who, so, and the what, you know, who are you and why should I buy your product? What about your product? What's your points of difference? If you can't answer those simple things, and a lot of people can't, that kind of does not really help your path. So if your path is a food product, let's just say, so you want to build around understanding why someone should buy your product, whether it's a CBD product or whether it's just a basic bread product. The path itself, you have to create it. And it's almost like a roadmap. So you have to have a sales roadmap, and that is, who are your targeted customers? You don't want to kind of really go off path. So if you want to go after grocery, you list five targeted accounts. You work on those five accounts until you're exhausted, and then you move on to the next five. But as far as the types of when you make your pitch and you're selling your product in, you still need to know the whys, hows, what. Why does the consumer care? How do you get to the consumer? What does your product do that no one else is doing right now? What, again, not to repeat myself, but I get back to those points of differences. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of manufacturers who feel, I make this, it's easy to get on shelf. Great. And there's a funny thing in the retail business, because there have been some really great, unique and interesting items, and they fail. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because they don't understand the sales path. And it gets back to the marketing side and the packaging. The consumer can't understand it. And if the consumer can't understand it, it fails. It could be the greatest product in the world. But if you're at shelf, you know, the consumer's making decisions in 5 to 10 seconds. I don't know what to do with it. They put it back. So it's a value proposition at retail right now. So it's, what can you do better than your competition at the same price point? How much more value can you add? And how do you get that across to the consumer?
Right. And then I guess when you're looking for that space on the store shelf, like this is a highly competitive real estate to gain, and the retailer isn't likely to blow somebody out to bring you in if you're not proven. So you have to make sure you have all your ducks in a row. And you mentioned earlier packaging. I mean, you have to have something that jumps out on the shelf, but also sits there nicely enough that the retailer can put it on the shelf and not have to worry about it falling off and stuff like that. Like there's a lot of thought behind every single thing that's sitting on a shelf there, isn't it?
Yes, there is. And you have to do that work up front as an entrepreneur prior to even going to market. And there's where the gaps are. Someone comes up with a great idea, I want to take it to retail, and they have no marketing plan. And we get this a lot. And it comes around. It comes very clear, because after 30 years of doing this, you ask a couple of questions, and then you are like, well, wait a minute. Your packaging is simple. You don't have a message. You don't have a mission vision. You have nothing for the consumer to relate to. How do you think it's going to sell? Well, you know, I mean, I see it on shelf now. I mean, I could just essentially put it on shelf just like everybody else. And we actually get answers like that. So it's become a lot more of a vetting process. So back in the day when I started in retail, you know, it was a much easier relationship between seller and buyer and consumer. It, because of all the consolidation and mismanagement and so on and so forth, it's become a much different playing field. Retail is hard.
What CPG channels actually seem to be achieving that necessary nimbleness to meet the customer demand? And then I guess probably beyond the customer demand, that retailer demand as well.
So the most nimble, you know, it's a really good question, because actually it's more of the food business, more of the organic food business. There's a lot of smaller companies coming in, and they're actually taking market share from the bigger players, because the bigger players, for example, will take 2 or 3 years to come out with an innovation where a smaller, you know, organization can actually do it in 6 months. So that's why some of the larger, like P&G, some of your larger companies are now starting to buy those smaller entities and letting them operate on their own. It's just speed to market. Speed to market is the winner, is the clear winner today.
Yeah, and I guess the smaller the ship, the easier it is to turn, right? So if you're operating a huge organization, there's a lot of stuff that has to be taken care of before you can actually make those changes. So you talked about Amazon a little while ago and how expensive it was to actually participate in Amazon. Mm-hmm. And with that, considering that, why are retail doors closing? Because those bricks and mortar stores are disappearing. And I mean, I had something shipped to my door I ordered yesterday. It just arrived first thing this morning. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is magic. Isn't it fantastic? I didn't have to leave the house. But that's hurting the bricks and mortar stores. So what's the answer here?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the funny things is that, let's just take Amazon as an example of the e-commerce business. The e-commerce business overall is still only 10% of the retail market. It's not a big entity. And out of that, Amazon is definitely the largest, no doubt. I mean, Amazon is Amazon. Mm-hmm. I'm a brick and mortar person. That's where I came from. E-commerce to me has replaced the JCPenney and Sears catalog. It's just a showroom out on the web. So with that being said, but what's happening in retail from my perspective is we were over-retailed to begin with. Too many doors, and retail was a real estate game. It all had to do with how many supercenters you have. And it even did it back in the 80s. There was a chain in New York called Pergament Home Centers. They were a hardware chain. They had about 30 stores, family owned, great. The owner was Murray Pergament. We've done business with them over the years. They tried to compete with Home Depot. So Home Depot came into the New York market with 150,000 square foot stores. So what does Pergament do? They go from a 25,000 square foot known store and then they started opening up larger stores, and it just got away from them. That wasn't their business. Their business was the hardware channel. And Pergament would probably still be in business today if they would have just stuck with what made them what they were. And then there's leverage buyouts. Toys R Us went out of business because of too much debt on the books, and that came from venture capital. So it just becomes a cash problem. And tariffs have hurt. There's absolutely no doubt. I think tariffs have hurt more than people think. And because these retailers haven't been nimble enough to kind of change their supply chain fast enough. And that's part of the other thing. There's so many layers. So I think the smarter retailers are here to stay. Retail is not going away. There's no apocalypse. I just think it's a correction in the market right now. The other thing that got away from people is the shopping experience. I mean, you walk into a Sears right now, the experience is just old and dated. It's back from the 80s. And I just, you know, that's where Target has invested a tremendous amount of money in their stores, updating their stores, making them brighter, merchandise better. They look great. They had a record year last year. So the consumer is still shopping. Consumer just wants to go to a store that is enjoyable. I mean, you walk into Shopko, you would think you're in the 70s. So consumers are becoming, you know, they have a choice now, and they want to go to a place where they feel comfortable and there's a good experience, friendly, you know, personnel. And that's, you know, store execution has a lot to do with it as well.
I think it all comes down to, and like, I've heard you say this word in this conversation, and I think it, and I've heard it in recent conversations as well, differentiation. Your product mm-hmm. has to be different. There has to be something special about your product that makes people want it. There has to be something special about your store for me to want to go into it, because basically most stores are all kind of the same and you're kind of getting the same stuff, because most stores right now are basically the equivalent of the general store. You can pretty much, I go to the drugstore now, I can buy groceries, I can get clothes and mm-hmm. camera equipment. It's like a general store. So all stores are pretty much the same. So you just have to make that experience unique in some way that makes me as a consumer want to go there. And your product has to have something unique about it that makes me want to buy it. So finding that differentiator is really important.
Yes, it is. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a tremendous amount. It could just be one thing. But what the relationship between manufacturer and retailer is, you're not going in to buy, you know, your cereal at Kroger because you want to go to, you're going to go buy Kellogg's at Kroger. You're going to Kroger to buy Kellogg's. Mm-hmm. And so it's really, you have to think, if you come with a product to market, what retailer matches best with your consumer? Because the first thing on the door, it's the door branding. So whatever on top of that door, I'm going to Kroger to buy Kellogg's. I'm not going to go buy Kellogg's because Kroger carries it. Mm-hmm. I enjoy shopping at Kroger and they happen to have Kellogg's. It's kind of like, I like my Target experience. That's why I'm going there to buy that Kellogg's product. So this is where sometimes, and you have national brands, and, you know, the national brands will always be the national brands. But what's happening today is the consumer associates first the brand on the door, and you're second. So the brand on the door is more important than the brand on your package. You just happen to be there. So once they're in the door, then you have to figure a way, okay, I have a captured audience. How do I get that consumer attracted to my product? And there's always been a misconnection on that. It's not that I want my product here. It's you're selling to this brand. Does this brand really associate with your product?
Right. Okay. So based on that, what are some final tips and takeaways that you can give to help a product company get into those stores and then stay on top?
Yeah.
Here's the money question, Chris.
Yeah, I know. That's that's the $1 million question. If I knew the real answer to that, I'd be sitting on top of the hill. But, you know, with that being said, I think that, you know, why is the company in the business? So what is their goals, right? So you have to identify. So if you have a, and if I'm answering this incorrectly, I apologize, but I think the real directive is to understand your channel and focus on your channel. Understanding that sales and marketing is what drives a company. It's not tweaking with it. It's not tweaking the packaging. It's sales and marketing and understanding what the sales process is. And a lot of companies, they think product innovation, let me spend a lot of money on this and that and tools. But you need something to feed the lion. And a lot of companies and manufacturers are getting away. They're making sales and consumer awareness kind of like an afterthought versus the actual main driver. And I'm not sure if that really directly answers your question, mm-hmm. but one of the big things that's really missing is understanding the revenue stream. So here in Park City, we have a lot of entrepreneurs, and the entrepreneurs create a product. Now what? They spend all this time perfecting their product, perfecting the packaging, but yet they have not gone to market and try to sell one item. It could be 3-4 years, and they just haven't sold it. Or they just don't understand the market that they're going after, but they think they do. Revenue stream keeps companies alive. And the guys that understand the revenue stream, they can't be treated just as a sales guy, because that person is super knowledgeable in what they do. They understand exactly how to get your product on shelf. That's where the investment needs to be made, more so than tweaking your package 4, 5, 6 times. So there's sometimes that disconnect. The revenue is going to drive it's going to drive the business. So I'm not sure if that really totally answers your question, but
yeah, it does actually. And I love the line, okay. feed the lion.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I the only thing I can tell on your audience and your entrepreneurs is that, you know, creating the product is the first step. Creating kind of your, you know, who is your targeted consumer and channel. But when it really comes down to it, your sales and marketing plan is probably more important than funding and the product itself. And a lot of entrepreneurs and companies don't realize that, especially new ones. Existing ones get it. The revenue stream is what you can make changes once you sell your product. You can come out with new products as the revenue comes in. So that's my 2 cents.
Okay. Chris, thank you so much for sharing your experience and your expertise with us on Make It Right. It's been fascinating.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Chris Rebsamen is the founder and president at Jupiter Sales and Marketing. I hope he opened your eyes a bit and gave you some ideas and things to think about. That is our show for this week. Please follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and you can find links to our social channels and our RSS feed at lucidi4.com/makeitright. And to stay on top of all of our new shows, subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and YouTube. I'm Janet Eastman. Until next time, thanks very much for listening to the Make It Right podcast.